Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ziprecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I want winners. I want people that want to win.
It is our season preview edition of We Want Winners. Double G here with Rod, and we're going to go over kind of our thoughts about what we expect coming out of the preseason, and we'll talk about the way that I want to handle this is I think there are two paths with the kind of team that they have, and we've talked about this, super top-heavy, stars and scrubs, the way that they spend their money on the team. You know, they have lots of superstars, but they also have lots of depth in which players need to play really well in order for them to have the overall roster that some of these other teams have. And I want to look at it from the perspective of here's what it looks like when things go right. And what do we see from that perspective? And what happens if things don't actually go perfect? Like, who are the players that they can least afford to lose? Which, you know, who's kind of the domino? Do we have domino players where if this player doesn't play well, it kind of affects everybody else? So we'll look at all of those things. We'll also do some prop stuff because I know Rod's looking into that, and he'll give us some of the things that he likes. And then we'll look at the Seahawks game. And I also want to, this year specifically, as we cover the Niners, I do want to look at the NFC West a little bit more because I think the division is going to be pretty competitive, and whether or not the 49ers make the playoffs may be decided on how they play in division, because I think all four teams are kind of close. Like, I think roster wise, maybe there are some separations, but if these teams play to expectation, the Rams, Niners, and Seattle could see them all being right around like 9, 10, 11 wins. And then Arizona is a little bit of the wild card, but, they played the 49ers well last year, I thought. So let's do it. Let's talk about this team. Rod, if the Niners are good and they make a dent in the playoffs, what are some of the things that you foresee happening in order for that to be the case?
I think that our rookies, especially on the defensive line, will have perform well. Williams, Collins, and West, all three of them need to be solid contributors. I believe that's like the first thing, because there's just really there's really nobody there with any kind of track record. And then you got guys like Kalaya Davis and I guess Kevin Givens will be back. But those are your quintessential depth pieces. Those guys really, I think two of those guys really have to establish themselves as the season goes on as capable, top of the league type starters. They don't have to be all pros, but they have to be serviceable starters. And, you know, a lot has been made about Robert Saleh. And while obviously he is a great defensive coach, the defense is only as good as the players. You know, we say it all the time. I say it all the time. And we saw an example of it. I know it's college, but we saw an example of it on Monday night. You know, Bill Belichick's North Carolina team, they look like a really well-coached team. They just didn't have players to play with TCU. So ultimately, it's the Jims and Joes that make the difference. So our defense, I know a lot was made about Nick Sorensen and I can't even remember my name. It's so far ago. So a year ago.
Steve?
Yeah. we made such.
What is Steve's last name? How can we not remember Steve's last name?
Wow. I kind of deleted that whole scenario. But yeah, it's
Steve Wilkes. Steve Wilkes.
Yeah.
Sorry.
There you go. Yeah. Me too. and I think those guys have to. We need players to step up. We you look at the linebacker core, same thing. We need guys to step up and become starters. You know, again, I'm not saying that they need to be nobody's going to replace, you know, Dre Greenlaw, but we need guys to be functional at all three levels for this thing. And it might be a thing where we are not as good in September as we are in December. Hopefully the team grows and gets better as the season, you know, wears on. You want to be peaking at the end, but I think that's what has to happen. Those, you know, at least half of those 11 draft picks need to step into meaningful roles. I think that's a big part of it.
So for me, I think it really starts offensively with Christian McCaffrey, and he has to be, he doesn't have to be the 2 years ago Christian McCaffrey. I mean, who can be that? Like, that guy was one of the most valuable players that I've ever seen on a football field with how much he did for that team. But I do think that there needs to be some, the threat of who he is, he needs to be out on the field. Like, we cannot have a season where he misses a lot of games, and I think that the 49ers can actually play good football. Even if you have a really good backup running back, their threat of what they can do on the field is not going to be as big of a factor, because no Brandon Ayuk, Juwan Jennings, as of this recording, we're recording this late Wednesday, and it'll go out on Friday morning. Juwan Jennings is back in camp. He and the 49ers came to some sort of agreement on the possibility of him making more money, dependent on what he does during the season, up to $3 million, I think is the number that we saw. But they are definitely a lesser receiving core than they've been in the last few years. So who steps up in those roles? Well, I think we believe that Kittle, especially early on in the season, he's probably gonna have some big games. But just the threat of Christian McCaffrey running and receiving, I think, takes some eyeballs off of other guys who can make some big plays. And without that threat, then you're focusing more on the middle of the field, where the 49ers like to do a lot of their damage, and you know, might not be as easy pickings for Brock Purdy with it, you know, if that happens. The other thing, and this is something that you and I've been talking about forever, it seems like now, which is their offensive line. And I know Pooney looks like he's going to be ready to play week one, which is great. But a lot of what they can do is based off of Brock getting those few seconds for him to make decisions. And he did a lot of running last year. If he has to run as much as he did last year, it's probably not to the benefit of the team. And I know in some cases, like, he's a playmaker. He wants to play, make plays. He sees a third down and he knows that based on what the defense is giving him, he may actually have to use his legs to get that first down. That might be the best play for that time. But if the offensive line, at least from a pass perspective, a pass blocking perspective, if he doesn't have the time necessary, then it was a little harder for him last year. And also, I mean, just the threat of any sort of injury to Brock, nothing against Mac Daddy Jones, but, you know, there's obviously going to be a bit of a drop off from Brock Purdy to whomever the backup is. So those are two things that, if those things go right, if CMC is back to 1,300 yards rushing, 700-800 yards out of the backfield, scoring double-digit touchdowns, I could see some daylight in the 49ers, you know, winning some big games, especially we've talked about their schedule and whether or not it's easy or hard based off of what the teams are doing this year. And then if Brock has time, we could see the Brock from 2 years ago as well, where he is picking teams apart and the completion percentage is high and the interception rate is really low. So those are two things for me. Now, let me ask you a question about the defense. How do you see the 49ers stopping other teams? The best player on the field, well, there are two best players on the field, Nick Bosa and Fred Warner. Obviously, it probably starts with those guys. But do you see a possibility of some of the young guys in the secondary making their name this season on this team?
That would be great, but I started up front because that the way this defense has always been set up is when you pressure the quarterback, the defense is designed to pressure the quarterback so that you're not putting your secondary in situations where they have to lock down receivers. You know, they play a lot of zone on the back end. And it's just one of those things that if you give a quarterback 3.5 seconds, you know, there's going to be a receiver open because they, you know, this is the NFL and you just can't guard, you know, NFL wide receivers for that long. But if you can heat that dude up, our best defensive, that's always been the recipe, is you heat that dude up, get him off his spot, and either get him to the ground or make him rush his throw, and it makes the secondary better. But obviously, if you're able to get that kind of sticky coverage from guys like Green, and I think we pretty much know what Lenore is. What I find interesting is Demo has always been a better slot than outside corner, but it looks like Upton Stout, according to the depth chart, looks like he has earned that slot job. So, you know, just by default, that means that Demo is the outside corner, which again, he can play, but I just don't think that we are as strong. We were always stronger when, you know, on passing downs, you could kick him inside and allow him to play the nickel. But that just is, you know, it doesn't seem that is what we're doing. So that's going to be interesting to see how, you know, if he is supposed to be our cornerback one, what that looks like, you know, week in and week out against the league's best receivers. That's kind of scary to me. And then Green, he had a good rookie season, but you know, we hope that, you know, it can, you know, the fact is that the growth is rarely linear, you know, and we hope that players like him and Pooney is another one who had a good rookie season. We just want to think that their development is going to be a line curve straight up. But I think that that's unrealistic, that, you know, in growth and development, sometimes there's peaks and valleys. So it'll be interesting to see as we move forward. I watched a lot of Renardo Green in college, and his problem was that he reminded me of who was the guy who played here who was really good? Josh Norman. He was a really, really handsy player. He grabbed guys and he was real physical. And he was able to play that way in college. And I was like, you know, there's no way you can do that in the NFL. And it didn't really rear its ugly head last year, but he only played, he didn't play 300 snaps. So as his reps increase, it's going to be interesting to see if he can continue to master his technique and not just be grabbing on guys and being giving away 15 yards on a regular basis. And, you know, it's just, there's a lot of question marks all over. You look at this roster. I do a lot of watching, but it was when they released the first depth chart, it was interesting to see that Luke Gifford got the nod at Sam linebacker, which I just assumed it was going to be either Martin or Tatum Bethune. So that, I thought that was mildly interesting. I didn't even remember much about him, in the preseason. There was nothing remarkable about him, but clearly he impressed the right people. So that's, you know, it's going to be, there's a lot of young guys, and that's a good thing for where I am happy as somebody who has railed against them going to the scratch and dent pile and continuing to just sign vet minimum guys. You know, it's nice to have, several. You look all around this roster there, definitely on the defense there was a concerted effort to get younger, which is great, but with that you have to understand, I think we have to understand that there are going to be growing pains that come along with having these young guys in, and that's a good thing. I mean, we got to let them grow into it. I'd much rather have somebody like Alfred Collins on a $1 million contract for 4 years than, I don't know, like Malik Collins or whoever, Leonard Floyd on a $4 million contract for 1 year. Let's just develop these young guys, even if it means taking a step back, that hopefully it'll mean if they're players, that we, moving forward, we'll have, you know, we just, the cupboard is bare, and it's far past time for them to strive to rebuild the cupboard with young players.
So you mentioned Mykael Williams. Now, we haven't even seen him because he was not playing in preseason. It, again, with the theme that things work out for the Niners and they are actually competitive and a possible championship looking team. Mykael Williams, what does he sack the quarterback? Does he contain the edge? Does he move inside and help the defensive line by moving inside on third down? Is Bryce Huff the one who's picking up the sacks on the other side of Nick Bosa? How do you see that whole thing working in your vision of, like, okay, this team is actually better than we thought?
People think it's a slight, but it's not. I think ideally in year one, if he could be Cleveland Farrell 2.0, that'd be great. Somebody who was solid against the run on the outside. And then again, has, you know, I am relying on what Robert Saleh has said, that, you know, he has been pretty effective rushing on the inside, which is good because he was not very effective at Georgia rushing from the edge. So if they can get any kind of pass rush out of him on third down by moving him inside and then, you know, replacing him outside with Bryce Huff, kind of like a build an edge with those two. Ideally, that's, you know, in a, if it works, that's what I think you're going to see, is you'll see him be really effective in the run game from snap one, and then give them and grow as a pass rusher and give them some kind of athleticism, size and athleticism on the inside, and allow, you know, Bryce Huff, you know, 101s on the outside. So that is how it looks if it works good. I'm just, you know, it got to the point, you watch the Bryce Huff tape from the Eagles last year, he just couldn't get on the field. He was just so ineffective last year. It was a combination of when teams saw him out there, you know, for it to work, and if you go back and you look 2 years to the tape with the Jets, you know, it was like it was new, and people just allowed him to line up and sprint to the quarterback, and the quarterback is standing back there 5 to 7 yards deep in the middle of the pocket waiting for him to come hit him. And last year, you didn't see any of that. Anytime he was in there, there was some sort of boot, there was some sort of chip, there was always attention paid to him, and he just couldn't handle it. And then, as you saw with the Jets and with the Eagles, if you cannot ask him to do anything other than rush the passer. If you ask him to cover something, that's a bad thing. If you have him going backwards, that's a bad thing. If you have him setting the edge, that you don't want any action from Bryce Huff other than running at the quarterback. But in our situation where things go great, he is able to, the two of them in some combination is able to give us some sort of pass rush on third down to make it so that teams can't just triple team Nick Bosa and dare everybody else on the defensive line to make a play, which is interesting. Mm-hmm. There's a couple of things that I want to circle back to Christian, but since we're on defense, it is interesting how you were talking, you said in your discussion about Christian at the very, very beginning, is people are holding him to an offensive player of the year standard, which I just think is kind of ridiculous. It's the same thing with Nick. You know, people say that ever since he signed his contract, he hasn't been the same. Well, number one, sacks are an incomplete metric when it comes to evaluating pass rush. He was third in pass rush run rate, and he in the last 3 years, nobody has hit the quarterback more than Nick Bosa. But that doesn't always mean he gets the sack, but he's there and he's pressuring. Total pressures and pass rush win rate, he is at the top. He's still one of the most disruptive players in the league. But the last 2 years, if you look at the players around him since, last year, since the Super Bowl year, and even that year, you know, you had Chase Young, Chase Stats, as I like to call him. And I'm just drawing a blank on these guys who are no longer here. The guy we paid all the money who we got out of here. To tackle.
Yeah, who
stole the money.
You're talking about Hargrave.
Yeah, that's it.
and then Leonard Floyd, who they did not re-sign after last year.
It's just, you know, he has not had a stellar cast around him. And you just, that if things are going to go well, like we said, we saw some good things from Robert Beal. Maybe he can give you something as a pass rusher as well. We need to get pass rush from someone else other than Nick Bosa. For if things are going to, and again, it looks like if the preseason is any indication, Saleh, it looks like he is going to be allowed to blitz a lot more. Because that was one of the things when he was here the first time, we rarely ever blitzed. That was just not something we did. But in the preseason, and again,
didn't really need to.
That's true. That's true. But again, it's one of those things where, that was one of the things I said when we re-signed him, is that, you know, I am not questioning his ability to coach, but this is by far, and if you go and you just, you know, empirically look at it, this is going to be the least talented defense he has coached, has coordinated in the league by a lot. I mean, there's just a lot of, you know, obviously he's got Nick and he's got Fred, but I don't know, maybe these guys are all good players. Maybe that's the case. Maybe I'm looking at this defensive depth chart and, you know, 80% of these players are either starter level or solid, replacement level players. And if that happens with his coaching, we might be able to surprise. But It's going to be a work in progress. He's going to have to coach these guys up, and they're going to have to be doing things that they just haven't done before. So I'm skeptical until I see it. As a 49er fan, I'm hoping that guys like Luter and Lucas and Martin can pay off some of that promise that they showed in the preseason, and a guy like Winners can take a step forward. I'm personally not holding him to, you know, filling Dre Greenlaw's shoes. I think that that's unfair to him to have that be the benchmark that we are holding him to. But if he can take a step forward, specifically in the run game, he played very well statistically and on tape in the pass game. It was just in the run game that he was not very effective. And maybe we can do something like I was talking about at the left end with them at linebacker, with, you know, Winners playing passing downs, and maybe Nick Martin mixing in on rundowns, because that's I didn't see it in the preseason, but that's supposed to be his calling card. So it'll be for it to go well, some or all of those things are going to have to happen. These guys are going to have to step up and make plays, basically, because that, you know, I was not as out on Sorensen as everybody else. I just saw a lot of bad football out there. I didn't see necessarily that, and maybe I'm just not qualified to that. That's possible too. I didn't see a bunch of guys out of position. I saw a lot of guys missing tackles. I saw a lot of guys not getting off block. I saw a lot of guys getting beat in coverage. And that's not the coach's fault. That's just bad play. And if we get that level of play, I don't care if it's, you know, Bill Belichick coordinated defense. If the dudes can't play, the scheme, you know, is not going, especially at this level, the scheme is not going to cover that up.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations, because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
So, on the flip side, if all of a sudden this current core just falls apart and it's more of a repeat of last year, which if it's a repeat of last year, then you're talking about maybe a teardown coming. I think the Niners will invest in the current core as long as they are competitive. But if they feel that the current core is not, then I think we may see some roster turnover from the guys that we were talking about, some of the big time players that they have. For me, it kind of starts and ends with both sides of the offensive and defensive line, because if I remember the best 49er teams, they often dominated the line of scrimmage, especially on the defensive side. And this is something that, you know, when we were looking at the playoffs last year, and I was just saying, like, I don't see Kansas City having a chance to beat Philadelphia, because the way that I see playoff football working is if you have a dominant defensive line, like, that is maybe the most important thing. And they wallop them in the Super Bowl. And now I'm not saying I'm this crazy prognosticator, but it's just one of the things that I see as related to a dominant football team. But if we see a similar, what you were explaining with Bosa and how Bosa probably had just as good of a year as he's had, except he just didn't have the pieces to help him. If we see another season like that, I could definitely see a 500 or below 500 football team if this reworked defensive line is not pushing the offensive line in the other direction. I can definitely see that. And then on the flip side, again, offensive line, I don't think that we believe they really even have a B+ outside of Trent, who, you know, Trent seems like he's like, okay, I got one. I'm coming back for one last ride, because I think that last year was a little bit of a fluke and we can kind of get back to what we were. But outside of him, you know, I'm not sure that, you know, they may have average starters at best. So to me, it starts and ends with offensive and defensive line. And if we don't see improved play this year, I do think that would be a reason to believe that maybe it does fall. What are some of your thoughts on where it all breaks down for the Niners if they're not good?
It's going to be interesting. I've got several thoughts. I wanted to circle back to, you had mentioned CMC, and I, you know, there was a lot of talk when they traded for Brian Robinson. I happen to agree with you that he is the cornerstone to unlocking the best version of this team. And that's why I just think it's ridiculous to think that you're going to bring in, if the notion was, what we're going to do is we are going to have him on a pitch count and we are going to limit his reps, then if that was something that this team was interested in doing, then trading Jordan Mason was one of the most ridiculous trades ever, because Brian, let's be real. Brian Robinson is not a running back 1A. That's just not what he is. And people tell me he started, and that's fine. The wide receiver one on the worst offense in the league is a wide receiver one, but there are levels to that distinction. So the fact that he was an RB1 in Washington for the past 2 years, get out of here. You're not going to take carries off of Christian McCaffrey's plate and put them on Brian Robinson's plate if you're smart. If you want to tell me that you want to low manage Christian McCaffrey, I believe you low manage Christian McCaffrey from Monday to Saturday. You do not And or if you want to do it on Sunday, if you want to take him from he got like he had 17% of the target share in 2023. If you want to bump that up to 20 to 22% and you rejigger, I think his touches need to stay the same. But if you want to take some of his carries and make them receptions, I think that's a good idea. But what I don't think you do is reduce his overall usage. I just think that's nuts, because having him out there, just the threat of him being out there is valuable. And from the first game he was here, we saw he is not a guy who is really about not being in the game. Some of the best shots ever were in those first games when he came, when he was traded here, when he would be out of the game and he'd be standing on the sideline with his helmet on, ready to go back in. He is just a football player. And that is, I don't think that you serve yourself by taking the ball out of Christian's hands or taking him off the field. I think the threat of Christian and the lack of the threat of Christian was more of a problem. I mean, again, obviously, Debo didn't have his greatest year. And then once BA was gone, that changes the complexion of the offense. But I don't think anything affected the offense. And again, I say all this when you look at the numbers, the 49ers offense still wasn't terrible last year. I was shocked at how good the metrics were. You know, they weren't as good as they had been, but they were by no means like a bottom third of the league team. They were still a competent offense. It's just that when you take somebody like Christian McCaffrey and I think that a big part of this offense is, obviously, he is a productive player. I don't mean to say that he isn't, but I think that the idea of Christian McCaffrey, there's something to the fact that him being out there, and kind of like the Steph Curry theory, that there's a gravity that he has that, you know, you have to account for him, and that lets other people eat. So I strongly push back on the notion that somehow, you know, what we need to do is, you know, get Brian Robinson out on the field more. That's ridiculous to me.
Do you think he mimics some of the things that Christian does well better than Jordan Mason? And could that be the reason why they looked at, like, because let's say, I think it's going to be really hard to take Christian out of the game, especially if these games are tight, because you take him off the, I don't know if there's a stat like this that exists, but, you know, points per play for a player on the field, like Christian's got to be one of the highest in the league as far as expected opportunity and expected scoring when he's in. You take him off and you put in Brian Robinson, that has got to drop precipitously. So I can understand if Robinson does some things that Christian does well, that you may be able to kind of get him in for a series or two and not really skip that much of a beat. But at the same time, Christian is on the field all the time because he is so good, and because he takes, not only when he has the ball, he does stuff, but when he's just running a route to see the defense just all move in his direction, like, that is so beneficial to their offense and to Brock Purdy. So, but do you think that Robinson does more things that may be best for their offense, like a Christian, than Jordan Mason was doing?
Well, there's no question that Jordan Mason is a different kind of back. And, you know, he is more of a north-south ripping runner. And the thing that came to my mind when you were asking the question was that there were times, specific times, when you have Jordan Mason running a wheel route 15 yards downfield, it's a different deal than when you have Christian McCaffrey running a wheel route 15 yards downfield. You don't have to cover Jordan Mason the same way you cover Christian McCaffrey. Christian McCaffrey is live. he is a real live threat. And I think, you know, Brian Robinson is more of a threat than JP in terms of that. You know, talking to a lot of Washington fans, that Cliff's grand plan was to use Brian Robinson more like Debo last year. And, well, it went so well that they decided to try to just go get the real Debo. You know, again, people shit on Debo, but I mean, it's been 6 years and everybody in the league is still looking for a Debo and nobody's found another one. He is one of one. So he does have a lot of this, that type of skill set. He can catch the ball. He's not Debo because nobody's Debo, but he is probably a better backup for Christian than JP was, because it was clear that Jordan Mason, he's more than a backup, and clearly the Minnesota Vikings thought so, because they not only traded for him, they paid him. So it would have been nice. I was really excited to have him as a backup. It was like, wow, we're in a real good spot with him there if anything were to happen. But maybe he was just too good to have that kind of luxury, because obviously the Niners weren't going to pay him.
He also got hurt, and then they had already drafted Garendo, and you could tell Shanahan was really intrigued with Garendo, but then Garendo got hurt, and so they just were the luck at their RB position. I mean, how many games did Taylor play? Like, he's like their fourth or fifth string running back, and he played at least two or three games for them in a starting role.
That, you know, and it was crazy because Jordan Mason, for that time, he was like leading the league in usage by a lot. Like, he got a lot of carries. You know, so it wasn't like he played three or four plays and got hurt. He would have been up there with Henry and Saquon if he had, you know, for a full season. He was being given the ball a lot. It's gonna be real. It's going to be interesting to see. You had mentioned the offensive line, and I got my 2025 offensive almanac in my email today. Shout out to Trench Warfare. It's a real good site if you guys want to check that out. Brandon Thorne, he does a great job with the minutia of offensive line, if you're geeky like I am on that kind of stuff. But it was real interesting how poorly we graded out on everything. We're like the oldest line. It's like the least amount of draft capital spent on a line in the league. We're like the lightest line. We're one of the least athletic lines. When you look at just about in every category, we're like at the bottom, which is it's telling about our which just speaks to the lack of the resources monetarily, draft wise, that we have put into that position. And it's interesting that we have been able to be as successful as we have, using that inefficiency. But when you look at that's the thing about that, is you look around the league, it's not like, you know, you said it best when you said there's a market inefficiency with offensive linemen, particularly tackles. So it's not like we, you know, maybe that is the way to do it. If, you know, if throwing, if you got teams that are throwing, you know, a lot of money and draft capital at it and they still stink. I mean, it's maybe that is maybe money and draft picks aren't the answer. You know, I don't know. It's a quandary, but those guys have to play well. They have to, you need Pony to take a step forward. I just don't think Brendel is very good, but we haven't been able, nobody they brought in has been able to replace him. But those guys really do. We have to be able to run the ball and we have to be able to pressure the, protect the passer. You know, we have the lightest offensive line in the league. And then he further breaks it down through the center, the guard center guard. And again, we're like the lightest by a lot. And I will continue to say, if you look at the Drew Brees model in New Orleans, they were always one of the biggest in, you know, guard center guard in front of Brees. You know, and it just makes sense when you have a smaller quarterback, you want to keep that pressure. You want him to be able to step up into that pocket and you don't want to have pressure in his face. And, you know, I think that's where, you know, a guy like Brock can develop bad habits just with, you know, he kind of feels phantom pressure because he has so much real pressure that he has to deal with that he kind of just starts to drift even when the pocket is solid. You know, it's just, it becomes, you know, because no, you know, it always kills me when he talks about, and you hear Bill Simmons talk about Aaron Rodgers, and now he doesn't like to get hit.
Doesn't want to get hit.
who does? Who's the quarterback that does want to get hit?
Young. Steve Young might be the only one who enjoyed getting hit.
That's crazy. But yeah, it's so, it's been interesting watching them build out this line, and it's going to be interesting to see if these guys, if they can step up and play well, because again, this Brandon Thorne, he's another one who says that a guy like McKivitz is going to be a pretty hot commodity out on the free agent market next year. And it's just watching him in a vacuum, I just, you know, he has gotten better, but I don't really think he's very good. But I guess there are a lot of offensive lines who would love to have Colton McKivitz as opposed to their right tackle. So it's a really, really interesting position. And they're going to be important to what we do on offense in our vision of if things go well. It has to include those guys playing well.
I don't know what the over under is for wins, but we just went through all the things that worry us and the things that we are hopeful for the season. Realistically, what are you putting their win total at for your prediction?
Well, I'm checking now, but I bet it in April it was 10.5, and I took the under. Yeah, I mean, that, you know, that's saying, you know, that's one of those things. How do you bet against your team? Well, it's one of those things where I hope to lose that bet. If I am wrong, for me to lose that bet, they have to win 11 games. And if they win 11 games, that's great. You know, I'm happy to lose that money. But yeah, it's still at 10.5. I don't. Things would have to go perfectly for us to be an 11 or 12 win team. I just don't see it. I would be happy at 10-7. If we are a 10-7 team, that would be awesome. I think that would be 10-7, hell, even 9-8 after last year with all of these young players. Because it means if we go 9 or 10 wins, with all the youth that we have injected to this roster, that is a great step forward. I mean, because you look, when you look at the depth, you know, the 53-man roster all over the place, we've got young players. We are much different, differently composed team than we have been over the past several years. And I, you know, how good are these guys? We don't know. But I continue to say I would rather develop young guys and go through the growing pains of that, to have these guys at year two and year three, to have, like, you know, I'm excited to have, you know, this year plus three more years of somebody like Connor Colby at guard or Drew Moss, you know, developing the drafting, developing, and then, you know, whether or not we re-sign them, that's a whole other story. But I am excited about the prospect of drafting and developing guys. And then if we get back to a place where we, you know, need players, and then you go out and you sign free agents or whatnot. But, you know, that, you know, I'm kind of glad we have gotten off of this track that we're going to, you know, try to tape, you know, duct tape and bubble gum it together for one more run at the Super Bowl. Because I don't think that I wouldn't necessarily call this a rebuild, but I wouldn't call it a reload either. I mean, it's hard for you to tell me that your big free agent signing or I don't even know who you would say there was, if there was, it, you know what, Jason Pinnock is your free agent signing? No, I mean, they have just rebuilt this roster, and they've got it's a lot younger. We're still one of the oldest teams in the league, but you've got you've injected a lot of young blood all around this roster, and hopefully these young guys can contribute. And if they can contribute, okay, if they're able just to contribute, and we're able to find, like I say, five or six solid NFL players, and we go 6-11 again, that would be progress to me. But if we are able to identify five or six young players and they're able to coach them up and get us to 9 or 10 wins, that would be a extremely successful season in my mind. Are we, you know, I just don't have the delusions that there's somehow we're going to end up in Levi in February. I've been here long enough to see good teams, and I've seen bad teams, and I know what a good team looks like on paper. And we're not as good as the 2023 team was. But, you know, who knows? Maybe BA comes back and all of these other moving parts fall in place. And, you know, that's the thing. I was talking to somebody today, and they made the point, and it's true. And I guess it could kind of flies in the face of what I said, is more so than I can ever remember. This person said that, and I agree that more so than I could ever remember, you know, the playoffs are a tournament. And once you get to the tournament, then, once you get there, you know, now it's just three games. All you got to do is win three games. Now, that's easier said than done. But if you can get there, maybe if you're getting there and you're developing and you're playing your best football at that time in December, maybe you get hot, you know. So I guess that would be the hope as a 49er fan, is we are, you know, it's just hard, man, when you look at teams like the Packers and the Eagles, and when you look at their rosters versus our rosters, and it's just those things aren't the same. And I, even as optimistic as I am as a 49er fan, I have to acknowledge that this roster isn't it's not Super Bowl caliber. And that's okay. Because I'm not a fan. My fandom doesn't require me. I don't think that if you don't go to or win the Super Bowl, it's the season of the failure. I think that if you can, I think there is, because I'm here for the long haul. I've been here for 40 years, and I'll be here for another 40. So I see there's a benefit to growth. And if I can see that young players are coming along and this roster is getting younger, and, you know, somebody like Matt Hennessy develops and he's able, and he's not really a young guy, but if he could somehow develop and get Brindle out of here, that would be a good development. If somebody like Austin Pleasant can develop into a swing tackle, because my biggest fear is seeing Spencer Burford. I'm sitting here looking at the depth chart and seeing his name behind Trent Williams is one of the scariest things that the notion or the thought that Spencer Burford could get reps at left tackle is that just can't happen, because he was just so bad in the preseason, objectively bad. I don't like to trash players, but he just wasn't good, you know. But I guess, you know, he's the best that they could come up with. So yeah, so I'm excited for the season in a different way. Obviously, it feels good, like, you know, it feels better, like we were in 2023. When you have a legitimate shot to win a championship, that feels good. But I'm also excited about developing some of these young guys and seeing this defense under the auspices of Saleh and Bradley, to see if they can develop these young guys and develop this defense into something that, you know, is good for this year and then lays down the building block for something moving forward.
I think 10 wins sounds right, because 10 wins means they're in the running for the division, I think, or at least pretty close. And you're probably in the running for the wild card. Maybe you even don't have to fight for that last spot at 10-7. You're probably doing okay. So that's what it looks like to me. But at the same time, they may be able to beat some of these teams, and they may have like a Jaguars like good record where you're like, they beat up on a sorry division, but when they play good teams, they may not be as good. I could see that as well for the 49ers, but I think 10 wins is the number that I would look at as, okay, this is a good season. Before we move on, and I want to get some of the props that you have, we have years, a little while ago, we had a Discord, and I didn't like the way that it worked, and so we got rid of it, clean slate. We rebranded our Valkyries and Warriors show to use the overall brand of Golden State Hoop, and there's a lot of Valkyries excitement around YouTube and around podcast stuff, and there's just not a lot of places to talk Valkyries because they're so new. So we created a Discord kind of around the idea of a place for Valkyries chat and Warriors as well. But it's not just going to be that. We're going to have channels for 49ers and Giants and any of the other Bay teams. And also, you know, for whenever we put out a show, we'll link in there. So I wanted to let folks know that it is kind of in this soft launch right now. We're still putting things together. But 49er fans, if you are out there and you want to come hang out in the Discord, I will have a game chat going every game, and also posting all of the news in our news channel that happens pretty up to date. I would say I get stuff up pretty quickly as it happens. So if you are interested, gg@bspnmedia.com. It is a private Discord at this point. I'm not sure if I'm going to open it up to everyone, But right now, soft launch. There will be threads for 49er games this weekend. We'll have all the news and all the stuff heading into the game. So GG at bspnmedia.com if you want an invite to our soft launch. We got some Valks people in there. So it's been cool to see who's interested in talking about the stuff that we love and the stuff that we cover. Okay. So what are some of the props that you have that you are interested, that you may have even bet, but some of the lines that you think are pretty interesting to look at?
Like I said, my biggest bet this offseason was that Niners under. But I love all of the I'm trying to find them now. I'm trying to keep it 49er centric. I love all of the George Kittle props. I love him over, his futures are his, I love him over yards. I love him, his touchdowns. Yards, catches, touchdowns, all of it are really, yeah, here we go. Odds for George Kittle, over under. Oh, well, I don't like the MVP. That's crazy. It's 500 at MVP. Probably not league MVP, but I like over 6.5 touchdowns. That yardage number is way up. I bet that at, it was 750 when I bet it in April. It's like now 900. So I don't know about that one now.
Seems like what we've been talking about, which is without BA and without Debo, who's pretty comfortable throwing to. Well, now Jennings is back. So that is some of that yardage may have had to do with the possibility of Jennings being out in the, you know, for the beginning of the season. But now he is back, so that there will be some attention there. But I do think, you know, if Kittle's whole thing, it seems to me, is just health dependent, because it's very clear that he and Purdy have great chemistry. And I would sense that if George Kittle plays anywhere from, you know, 14 to 16 games, those props sound like gimmies to me.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I also like Brock. As crazy as that sounds, with all of the consternation around who is he going to throw to, I just think that he is going to. I think he's going to have a really good season. I mean, he is coming into his own, and obviously he got paid. But I'm really excited about the season that he is going to have. He is 22-1 for the MVP, 23.5 touchdowns. I love that over. I think he crushes 3,800 yards. I mean, who is he going to throw it to? That's what, you know, I've heard. I think he's going to throw it to Christian McCaffrey and George Kittle. And like you say, now with JJ back, and I think that, going to my next guy, I think that our guy, Pearsall, Pretty Ricky, is going to be a sneaky target monster. I think he can. I don't know what he's going to do yardage wise, but I like him. I like his. I got him at over 50.5 catches. I think that's stealing money for him. I think he's going to. I think he's going to blow past that. I think. I don't know how the target distribution is going to break down, but I think he's going to, I think, especially while Ayuk is out, I think he's going to see his fair share of targets.
Isn't it wild that last year it felt like all of the noise was on whether Brock was going to be good or not? And then he had a good season. He didn't have a great season, he got paid, and now no one is saying anything about him as far as whether he's, you know, whether he's a elite quarterback or not. I think it's just wild how the stories can just move on to, you know, whatever the stories are going to be, or whatever the stories are right now. It's to, you know, Dallas is soaking up a lot of the attention, and Aaron Rodgers is always soaking up a lot of the attention. But like, even Mahomes, you know, Mahomes had a down year from the perspective of, you know, gaudy passing stats, and, you know, they got blown out in the Super Bowl. But it's like, what do you expect from Mahomes? Is he gonna come back, have this crazy comeback season? Well, he also still doesn't have, you know, the crazy weapons, and his homie Kelsey's probably gonna be done after this year. What does that mean for him? Like, there's some, a lot of the names that are usually out there, like, it seems like people have moved on, and I'm like, okay, mm-hmm. Who are the targets this year? Who's gonna get the Brock hate from Steven, what's that guy's name from The Ringer, who just was all over Brock last year? But so it's just funny how, you know, things, the narrative can just move on and you just forget about it. But I agree with you about Brock's season, because the one thing that he proved last year is, even when he wasn't as precise as the year before, and there were a lot of reasons for that, he still put up the counting stats like crazy, because of the fact that Kyle Shanahan is, you know, he's going to get guys open, and there's going to be lots of opportunity, and then they're behind in a lot of these games. So he was throwing the ball a lot more probably than they wanted to. But I think he's going to have a similar, maybe not the two seasons ago, but probably in the middle between two seasons ago and last year. And if that is the case, then he probably blows through those as well. Now, the only thing, and this is what is unpredictable about this stuff, is somebody gets hurt and misses five games, and you're just screwed no matter what with your props.
As we sat here last year, and I'm like, this Christian McCaffrey over 4.5 touchdowns, this is stealing.
Yeah, exactly. And then he's in play. Niners are pretending that they're being truthful about stuff. So I also looked at their Super Bowl odds. Their Super Bowl odds are surprisingly higher than I would have thought. But again, you and I are not the cheerleading, you know, pom-pom raising kind of fans. And you mentioned as well that the Niners are a pretty popular franchise, so with that comes some you know, lower odds than maybe some other teams. So the top odds for Super Bowl winners, the favorites are the Ravens, the Bills, and the Eagles. And then, you know, based on what book you look at, they're kind of close around the odds. Then after that is Kansas City. So all Kansas City does is go to the Super Bowl, and they have the fourth best odds to get there. Then after that, there is a group that includes the Niners, with Green Bay, Washington, the Bengals, the Rams, the Niners. They're all kind of in this mix close together. I would have thought that the Niners would actually be a level below that group, but they are with that group, so I was kind of surprised. And I don't know, not that I would bet the Niners to make the Super Bowl or anything like that, but it just shows you what some of the fans or the national teams or the outlooks are. Another thing that I looked at today was the Athletic's power rankings, and the Niners were a little bit closer to what I would have thought in that power rankings. I think they were 15th, so, you know, not quite in the middle, but not very far from the middle. And I think that's a good place to be at the start, considering, you know, they won six games last year, whatever it is. So I think that's a little bit more realistic to what I'm thinking. But I think if you are 15, you're going up from there, as long as you play good football. And if you get below 15, then yeah, that's a rough season for the team. Where do you see them fitting in the division, by the way? Who do you like in that division?
I think it's going to be a rock fight. I think I can make the case for all four teams, I can argue, I can make an argument for all four of them winning the division. I could make an argument for all four of them finishing last in the division. I just think that it's going to be really, really close. I mean, I've spent a lot of time studying each of those teams. Like, this game on Sunday is going to be interesting because they are like mirror images of each other. The Seahawks brought in Clint Kubiak to be able to run the Shanahan offense because they want to be able to run the ball. They want to make Ken Walker their Christian McCaffrey. And so they are trying to get their offensive line and run game together. And obviously, on the flip side, we have no idea what our run defense is going to look like, because if it's anything like it was last year, it's going to be a problem. So right out of the gate, that's going to be an interesting matchup. And quietly, I know it sounds crazy, but I think the Cardinals are going to be a sneaky good team. I mean, they've got a lot of talent over there. They had a really good draft. They seem to really respond to Gannon. Kyler seems to have matured, and
he says he wants to run again.
That was what I was going to say. That was very interesting to hear him say that that is something that needs to be a part of his game, which I agree that it really unlocks him if you can kind of threat.
Because when the Niners play the Cardinals, I'm far more fearful of a 3rd and 7 where I'm worried that Kyler is going to scramble for the first down because he's so elusive. I am less worried, and I'm usually more relieved when he's throwing on 3rd and 7 from the pocket to some, you know, to he's got Harrison and such. But like, that is like the scary part of his game is being able to pick up first downs when the defense almost does everything right. And if he can do that, he is very valuable to that offense in the way that maybe he hasn't been in the last couple of years.
Kind of like Russ in the heyday of the Seahawks. He was the bane of our existence with that, where we would have everything defensed perfectly and then scoot out 15 yards, first down, and it just breaks your heart, you know. And that is what he brings you. And then, you know, Marv didn't have the season that everybody kind of was expecting, but it wasn't like he was trash. And so now going into year two, he is an interesting player. And then McBride is just like a target monster there. So I think this is going to be a really competitive division. And I hope the 49ers can stay in the mix, but I think that you're right with your assessment. I think 10 wins puts you in a very good position to win that division. So I think whoever is the first to 10 wins, probably wins the division. And, you know, Stafford, you know, the Rams kind of go where Stafford goes, because it's been a long time since I've seen Jimmy play, so I don't know what you can kind of expect from him. But, you know, that being said, you know, we've seen Jimmy, you know, we saw Jimmy in a Super Bowl once upon a time. So it's not like I think they take a step back if Stafford is not there. But, you know, it's not like Jimmy is, you know, just trash. So I think it's going to be a very competitive division, more so than it has been in a long time. So I'm excited about it, actually.
So you and I will be back Sunday. I can't go right after the game because I have something to do. I may not even be able to watch the end of the game. I may like be watching the end of the game on my phone, but so we'll go as long as you can go. We can try and go Sunday night and do our normal recap. By the way, we hit episode 100 today of this show.
Oh,
incredible.
Congratulations. Thank you. This is awesome.
Yeah, no, that was a cool little number that I was looking at today. So last thing for I want to get out of here, because Brian and I on Golden State Hoop, we had this conversation because I was very interested to see where Steph Curry fits in the pantheon of Bay Area athletes. And so I asked my dad, who was probably watching sports, I would say early 60s. He's a, you know, he's a young kid in the early 60s. And then I started, I have memories of like 83 season for all three teams. And then Brian is about, he said he thought maybe 2006, 2007 is when he can really remember some of the sports. So my dad, I said, okay, who's the Mount Rushmore of your lifetime for Bay Area sports? And originally he took the question as like, you know, who were important to him. And so he's like throwing out John Brody. And I'm like, no, like Montana, it has to be Montana if you're going to pick a 49ers quarterback just based off of the Super Bowls. Like, you know, Joe is a Bay Area royalty. So he finally went Willie Mays, Steph Curry, Joe, and Jerry. I had Steph, Joe, and Jerry. But my Willie Mays is obviously Barry Bonds because I didn't get to see Willie play. So I told Brian, I was like, if you didn't see them play, you can't pick them just in your lifetime who you actually saw. So Brian picked, and of course, because the Warriors and the Giants are winning titles and the Niners aren't in his lifetime, and you and from you and me, the Niners are winning titles in our lifetime, Brian went Steph, Draymond, KD, and Buster Posey. So he's kind of iffy on the KD one, just because KD was only here for those three seasons. But my hypothesis was Steph Curry, when it's all said and done, he's going to be remembered with Willie Mays as the greatest Bay Area athlete of all time. And when I had all those three lists, I was like, okay, like that kind of, you know, that resonates with my hypothesis. So who would you put on your Mount Rushmore of, you know, Bay Area athletes? You growing up as a A's fan, you may have Ricky Henderson on there.
Absolutely.
But you and I are very similar as far as what we grew up watching. So what would be your Mount Rushmore?
It's interesting that because I am young. I'm old enough that I was born, and there's like pictures of me at I was like 2 years old, but there's pictures of me at the 74 World Series. My mother talks about how I used to run around saying Reggie. But I was just, you know, I was too young to fully, my memories of Reggie Jackson are as a Yankee, and hearing about him as an Oakland A. It would definitely be Steph and Ricky for sure. That Barry Bonds, the Barry Bonds experience was just something that it was for all the wrong reason. My mother had gotten sick, so I was there for this. I was in the Bay Area for the 72 home run season, and me and my uncle kind of bonded over. And my then she got better, and then towards the end of the year, she was taking classes at University of Phoenix down there by the stadium. So I never went to any games because, you know, it was like a really hot ticket. So I didn't have that kind of bread. But just the energy around the city and around the stadium that season was, I was in the Bay for the 22 championship. So that was cool. But I missed the other three. I was living away. So the energy that surrounded Bonds and his home run chase was like nothing that I had ever experienced as a sports fan. It was so electric. So he would be on there for me as well. So Steph, Ricky, and then as a Niner fan, it would come down to, I just think it's either Joe or Jerry for me. And Jerry Rice, in my opinion, is the greatest player ever to put on cleats. So I'm gonna go with Jerry just for that reason. But you could easily make the case for Joe. It's either, for me, as the Niner representative on the Mount Rushmore, is either Joe or Jerry. And if you say it's Joe and not Jerry, I'm not gonna argue with you, but it's my list, and so it would be Steph, Ricky, Barry, and Jerry.
No.
And I like the alliteration.
Yeah. And you were able to get one player from each of the four teams. Now, depending on what era of the Raiders, you know, because the Raiders are right. They're in mm-hmm. Oakland, then they're gone, then they're back, and they're gone mm-hmm. again. This is awesome. And again, you know, Steph Curry kind of just on all of the lists, which was,
and he's going to be, like you say, he's going to be, cause like you say, if you are a person of a certain age, Willie Mays is it in terms of Bay Area sports fans. And I think that Steph is going to be that for several generations of people as well.
I think it's Willie, Steph, and Jerry would be the top three, because the thing that Steph doesn't have, because Steph has the championships, Willie's doesn't have one in the Bay Area, but he's got one in New York. But the thing that separates, like, Steph also isn't known as the greatest basketball player of all time, and Willie's known as the greatest baseball player of all time, and he played the majority of his career in San Francisco. So that is that thing. And, you know, Barry is kind of right below him, but I don't think I would put Barry above Willie. Barry does have the home run record, but he is not considered, by the people who have seen both players, he is not considered to be the greatest of all time, whereas Willie still is. So I would lean on that one.
I don't know that Barry, you know, is as big an ego as Barry has, I don't know if he would put himself above Willie.
Right. So then you have Steph, four championships. You have Jerry Rice, four championships. Joe Montana, four championships. So they're close, but I think, like you said, people consider Jerry Rice to be maybe the best football player of all time, whether you have Jerry or Walter Payton or Lawrence Taylor. Or, like, but Jerry is in that discussion.
In the conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he is in that conversation. And from a quarterback perspective, Joe Montana kind of gets replaced by Tom Brady. But to my point in that argument is always that the NFL that Tom Brady played in more resembled, like, passing league than the NFL that Joe Montana had to play in. The rules had changed, which doesn't make the accomplishments any lesser, but maybe the gaudy statistics that Brady put up, you kind of have to look at those with a grain of salt. But, you know, that just this conversation just tells you how many, not only how many tremendous athletes, but how many tremendous teams. Like, what area has all three teams, you know, and let's include the A's from the 70s and the 80s. Mm-hmm. Just the amount of championships in this area is incredible.
And then if you include the Raiders from the 70s and 80s too, I mean, it was a very, very fertile sports landscape. It was great growing up in it. I hated the Raiders. I was the only one in my family so affected. Everybody else were Raider fans. And I, you know, that's my lot, is I kind of zig when everybody's zagging. when I was coming of age as a football fan, the Raiders had just left and the Niners had just got good. And so it was like a perfect amalgamation of, you know, you know, the Raiders were gone, and then in my world, the Niners just kind of slid in, and I never looked back. But yeah, it was a great time when you had all of those teams, all five teams, kind of going. You know, back then in the 70s and 80s, the Warriors were not very good, and that's why for me, you know, the championships were just so unexpected. I never thought that I would see a Warrior championship, because I watched some pretty bad basketball, you know, but you know, that was just, you know, that was my lot. But yeah, that, and again, that for me, that's why Steph holds a special place, is because he, you know, he made that happen. He made those kind of dreams come true. Four times. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's really crazy to think that the Warriors are four-time champions. But yeah, that's a great thought exercise. A lot of memories. In thinking about that.
All right, so that is it for our preview. We'll be back on Sunday evening at some point to talk about Week 1 versus the Seahawks. And, you know, I will admit, I don't like the NFL preseason and the training camp these days. You don't really get a ton of information out of the training camp because these teams are just trying to keep their players healthy. As far as, like, intrigue and not really knowing what we have, I'm pretty excited for Week 1 just because I want to be able to make some sort of conclusions about this team that I'm not sure that I can necessarily make yet. But anyways, so we'll be back on Sunday evening. For Rod, I am Double G. We will see you when we see you. Peace out.
The weather may be cooling down, but the deals are heating up during the Red Hot Sale event at Omaha Steaks. Save 50% site-wide on legendary steaks, beefy burgers, cozy comfort meals, and more. Plus, get an extra $35 off with code HOTSALE when you shop omahasteaks.com today. From tailgating essentials to everyday family favorites, the Red Hot Sale event is your chance to save big on everything you need to serve up fabulous fall flavor. USDA certified tender steaks, plump and juicy air-chilled chicken, easy appetizers, and even cozy comfort meals for those busy weeknights. And every bite is backed by their 100% satisfaction guarantee. Don't wait. Blaze a trail to omahasteaks.com to save 50% site-wide on steaks and more during the Red Hot Sale event. Plus, get an extra $35 off with code HOTSALE at checkout. That's omahasteaks.com, code HOTSALE. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.